Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this special primetime edition of the Surreal Quinn Review on this 23rd of September, 2013. As we discuss episode 515, season 5, episode 15 of Breaking Bad, second to last episode, which was, of course, titled Grenade State, please let me help. These names these last couple weeks have been giving me. But Grenade State, which, of course, is the thing for New Hampshire. I have been alone for the past 2 weeks. But you know what? I brought some company. We brought our own cleaner to the show, along with Robert Sapp, Chad Quinn. Welcome to the program.
Thank you,
sir. I was
going to
say, how did you get introduced first? I'm the regular, so it's Robert Sapp, and then it's like the cleaner, Chad Quinn.
I think your fan base already knows you, so it's understood that you would be here. You don't have anything else to do.
I need my first billing. Come on now.
Anyway, you've already moved my introduction, but thank you. Peace and blessings.
This is what we do, people. So, tremendous episode last night, of course. We're going to jump right into it with the opening. You have Walt along with Saul, and we finally meet with the disappearer, the cleaner, who is brilliantly played, of course, by Robert Forrester of Jackie Brown fame, and has been in a number of movies where he's, again, played great. He's a tremendous character actor. They meet up. You have Saul and Walt. You know, first of all, one of the surprises was seeing Saul there. That was a minor surprise. So Saul is there. He's, you know, has him headed towards Nebraska. Forrester gets introduced, the cleaner gets introduced, and Saul and the cleaner have a conversation about what's going to happen. Saul asks him about, this is when Saul finds out that Walt is still staying with Robert Forrester's character, and of course Walt is basically going batshit at on the video camera, so those two were probably bunk buddies for a night. So a quick opening, quicker than most of these openings are. It was basically almost only just about 2 minutes, if that, about 2 to 3 minutes, maybe no more than 2 minutes. So this was a quick teaser by the show. What were your thoughts on Sapp? What were your thoughts on this opening scene?
Yeah, I mean, like, I agree. Like, I think it was fairly quick, but it didn't need to be long, you know, because, like, it's like now we are completely immersed in the end game. Like, it is literally, like, what is, like, they're now taking us through the steps of what is going to happen to Walt, and it is specific. And so I thought the scene set up well, like the initial kind of like anger, you know, still like I'm still Heisenberg in my head kind of Walt, which sets up well what happens in the rest of the episode.
Chad, what is your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Rob. I feel like this was like a prelude to what was further developed in the episode. And by that, I mean just how delusional and gone Walt is, or how we're losing Walt and just becoming completely Heisenberg. And I think, you know, even the way watching him, you realize that conflict just fuels him. He's like the Hulk. So it's like Saul is this sleazy.
I could have been gonna say that.
You know, he's this sleazy, deadbeat, scheming, half-assed lawyer. But with all the damage he's done, he has this moment of serenity. You know, he becomes a person, just a nobody. And he's like, look, man, just give yourself up. Like, this is the dude that's acting normal, finally. Like,
oh, hold on. Slow down.
I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong scene.
You jump scenes. Look at that.
This is just an
opening teaser right here. They haven't had a Walt, in this scene, Saul and Walt didn't talk. Walt was still downstairs in the room.
Oh, yeah, so sorry. I did jump.
Yeah, you know.
I did jump.
You know, it's a mistake. It's all right.
Okay, so let me backtrack a little bit. I gave too much. But basically what I loved about the scene, it was just foreshadowing to the end of Saul. You know, I felt like, and this is something I'll, you know, talk about later on, but and not to bring up Dexter or other shows, I feel like the writing's so good that they're doing good farewell and goodbyes as they set up, you know, the ultimate showdown for next week. But I think just having that moment and having these two, which, you know, factually, do I think that this guy who makes a living off of hiring people and moving them would have both of them at the same place at the same time? Not really, but for what we needed to see, it was only fitting and humorous at the same time.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I like this. Robert Forster just jumped out. That was like, okay, like this you couldn't cast a better person for this particular role. Scene number two, you have Todd, Uncle Jack, watching the video that they have taken from Hank's house, the confessional tape. The FBI, the DEA had drove past the house, saw the house was broken in, went in with a couple of agents, of course, drove Marie out of harm's way, and of course you see the devastation on Marie's face, realizing that Hank is dead. And then you have Todd, Uncle Jack, watching Jesse's confessional in which Jesse puts Todd in for the killing of Drew Sharp, and basically making fun of Jesse crying at every moment in the video, and what have you, and then you have, you know, this leads to having Jack, who was about to kill Jesse in the desert, wanting now definitely to do Jesse in based on the fact that he ratted his nephew out, and Todd, of course, for the second time in as many episodes, saves Jesse for Lydia, and to get that product, that meth, that blue meth, and the percentage up. So that was this particular scene. What was your thoughts on that set?
I'll let Chad go first on this one.
Okay.
I'll be brief, because I this scene was a little hard for me to digest, only because the one thing I liked about it is, and, you know, I'm sure you guys have already captured this repeatedly with these podcasts, but what I love about the writing, besides it being good, is that it's they do so much for the fans. So just a little nuance of, you know, Uncle Jack saying, does this be, you know, cry through the whole thing? That in itself, to me, was just a play on Jesse being so overly emotional for basically two seasons now. I don't even know if Jesse's talked in two seasons. I see him crying and screaming and heartbroken. He's like an emoticon at this point.
True, because I watched season five. Jesse is not broke down in the first part of season five.
Fair enough. But that's so far removed because of all the tears I've seen the last 5 weeks.
Very true.
I can't even remember that. But
Jesse has cried a lot.
So I was with it with that part. But, Terrell, as you mentioned, a big thing with me is consistency. So for 2 weeks in a row now for Ty to rescue Jesse when his uncle's about to kill him, when this guy, I just feel like the type of murderers they are, I just don't see them leaving so much room for error. And, you know, the whole Lydia thing, it was like a reach for me. you know, that this relationship is this serious. This is the angle why Todd is keeping Jesse around. You know, but with that said, I appreciated it because I think that they're going to continue to dangle Jesse in front of us, for me at least, until we just want him to die. I mean, I can't take this with Jesse. I just can't take it with him. So I feel like they just will not, they won't take him out of his misery. But anyway, that's all I have right now.
So sad. All right, so this will be a bit confessional, which is why I also wanted Chad on the show. I agree on the most, I agree with what you said about the motivation and the lack of motivation on the Nazi characters to kill Jesse. I agree with that. I also agree, and I think I haven't said this anywhere else, that the part of Breaking Bad's writing that is the weakest is that they have not an end goal, but they have this really big, huge statement they want to make, and they will fit pieces to try to make that statement that wouldn't necessarily happen. I think that's like when you get into the nitty-gritty of the writing. With that being said, though, you'll hear me say this a lot in this episode and the next episode, if what I think is going to happen is going to happen, that these last few episodes, and this episode, it just crystallized for me, is about the statement that if, like, meth is this horrible drug. If you participate in its production, then it is agony, and there's nothing else. And so while I agree exactly with what you're saying, I think the overall message is that, and me and Cyril were talking about this the other day, is that nobody's getting out of this without pain and lots of pain.
Right, if not death.
And actually death might be the easiest part of it. And so what I see happening with Jesse is Jesse paying for his sins, because as we all know, Jesse was an equal participant in this. Walt definitely manipulated him and mind-effed him and did all these different things, but Jesse was the meth dealer first. Walt came to him. And so what we're seeing is him paying the ultimate price of this decision to go in with Walt. And so I like the scene for that. It's just like, what Jesse, if Jesse makes it out alive, if he will be tortured for his part in this. That's kind of how I saw that scene.
I agree.
Yeah, I think that the only thing that saved Jesse, obviously, with Todd, is the fact that Todd is the relationship between Todd and Uncle Jack, the fact that they are related. Because if this was just like a close partner, if this was like just a close partner, a close friend, or a mentor that Uncle Jack was to Todd, then I would have a problem with them letting Jesse live back-to-back episodes. But the fact that his uncle, you know, that's his uncle, his uncle's probably grateful for him bringing them into this, helping bring them into this, I buy it, and I really have no problem with it, with the writing from that standpoint. Todd with the Lydia thing, obviously he's being led by, you know, his emotions for Lydia, and from a business standpoint, it makes sense because it's a product that Jesse's able to produce at 92%. So I had no problem with that. I mean, with them with that with this particular scene, with this particular scene, and with Todd saving Jesse once again. I think that he, in his own psychopathic, social, you know, crazy way, I think he actually kind of likes Jesse. His just sociopathic way, where he's crazy as hell. I actually think he kind of likes Jesse a little bit and looks at him like a, almost like a pet. So, in that way, if you like, so I think that, you know, I think from that standpoint, and I think I also believe he's getting off on torturing Jesse based on the fact that Jesse punched him in the face. I think he's enjoying that too, from what happened with last season. So I have no problem with.
Can I clarify my point just really, really quick?
Go ahead.
Because I know, like those are all the nuts and bolts, and I totally get that. And you got to keep this show moving based off the nuts and bolts. Totally understand that. This show's making such a bigger point than those nuts and bolts. And I think what I as a fan was rooting for in my head was, or thought was going to happen, was that, oh, they're keeping Jesse alive so that Jesse will be the final nail in Walt's coffin. I no longer think that at all.
Yeah,
I know what they're doing. The message is Jesse has to pay. That's the message of everybody has to pay for this horrible decision. And I don't know what else they could do to Jesse. Jesse. He's paid.
He's paid. He'd rather be dead right now. So next scene, we move on to, and this, you'll like this, Chad. We move on to Walt and Saul at the cleaner's place where they discuss.
That was my favorite scene. I had to go through it.
where they had their discussion. You have Walt and Saul. They now, you know, the cleaners upstairs, you know, handling business. Of course, we know how hot Walt is at this point, being basically, you know, on every poster and television station across the country. So he has a lot of due diligence to do with Walt. So you have Walt. Walt is up here making a list himself of hitters or guys that he wants killed. Or, you know, he's making this list. He asks Saul, you know, who do you know? You know, who do you know? But, you know, what kind of, like, you know, the money situation, what kind of, you know, how much, things, details on killers, professional killers that he can get to kill Jack, Uncle Jack, and the rest of the crew, and that whole crew. And Saul is like, dude, I'm out. Saul is basically like, I'm done. I'm going to Nebraska. I'm not your lawyer anymore. It's, you know, game's up. Saul is like a regular Joe at this point. He wants zero to do with Walt. Walt, of course, I'll pay top dollar. This doesn't end until I say it ends. And then Walt goes into his, tries to go into Heisenberg, and a la season four, you know, tries to intimidate Saul. And even before that, Saul gives Walt this spiel on, you know, what they'll do to his wife, what they'll do to his family, the RICO charges. You know, he's given Walt great advice. He's given him great lawyer advice to be like, dude, you should stay in New Hampshire. You should stay in Albuquerque. You know, swallow your medicine, take your medicine. That's your family would be better off. Then, of course, Walt, in typical Walt fashion, I don't want to leave. This is the last thing. I never wanted to run. Typical Walt. We're not seeing the forest from the trees, what Saul's really trying to say. So Saul's trying to talk sense into Walt. Walt's not trying to hear. He wants these dudes. He wants these guys dead. He wants his money back. And he then approaches Saul in an intimidating way. He says, it's not over. Like I told you before, it's not over until I – and then couldn't even finish his sentence without coughing. And then this is one of the funniest scenes of the whole episode. Saul, like, dude, it's over. You can't even finish your sentence. So Saul's like, it's over. And then that's when, and then that concluded that particular scene. And then Saul tries to Saul tells the cleaner gives them a cleaner gave them a minute to discuss it out, because first Walt of course demanded that Saul travel with him to New Hampshire.
Right.
So what were your thoughts on that particular scene?
Yeah, I'll go first on this one, Rob.
Yep.
Because, you know, I already started anyway. But I have a few thoughts. So the first thought I'll go with is what I love is, as we talked about, like, okay, to really to be able to enjoy this show, you have to accept it for what it is. And that was my hardest hang-up for Breaking Bad initially. I'm like, so you could become a drug lord in a year. You could rob a train. We can go over tons of things that just won't happen. But that takes away from what the show actually is. So with that said, I still am happy that the show has moments of brevity where they're like, okay, we have to have some realism here. So last week when Walt calls Skyler and clearly tries to, you know, not implicate her and throw it all on him, I'm like, okay, so Skyler's going to be off? And then thankfully Saul's like, I hope you know it doesn't work like that. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's going down. They'll get her if they can't get you. And it's just that quick moment that I needed as a viewer to, like, yes, come on, anyone knows anything about the law knows that it's not that simple. Walt put in a good word for her, and she's got free. So I love that. That's just a little nugget there. But what I really love about this, and it goes back to me saying, looking at Walt as this Hulk, what I love about that is it did two things. As we see him become more delusional, when you're telling the guy, the cleaner, that you're demanding that he stays with you, like, okay, first of all, who's up to his demand? So it's showing that he's still delusional, thinking he has his power that he doesn't. But deeper than that, I think, and me and Robert spoke about this on another forum about Dexter and what Dexter does wrong, is that for the fans that root for Walt, it's okay if you root for him, but you need to know what he is. And I think with Breaking Bad, just the name in itself, you have, and you know, you think about what the show did, which is so beautiful. Like, so Skyler, she was smoking cigarettes when she was pregnant. You know, Marie, she was a thief. Hank was dealing with fits of rage. And those are little nuggets as for sometimes good people do bad things. Walt is the opposite of that. He's a horrible person that sometimes does good things. He's a horrible person. So it's okay if you root for him, but you have to know who he is. And just when you think you, if we feel that you forgot that, let me put someone else in the scene, because Saul's another one. He was just a low-life, crooked lawyer. And ever since Walt has come into his life, excuse the pun, but Walt is a cancer.
Yep.
He's a cancer. And everyone he comes around, he makes everything so much worse for them. So it's like having them to, like, this scene was so dynamic just to see how far gone Walt is. When you look at Saul as a person, this is the first episode I looked at Saul as a person, you know what I mean? With feelings. He's like, oh man, it's over. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Turn yourself in. This is the lawyer. This is what he's telling him. You know, you don't have much to live. So I thought this was one of the most dynamic scenes as far as just capturing, to Rob's point about everyone paying, but just capturing what the show is about. You know, and it's taking people in these situations who have some of harmed people and, you know, done wrong. But regardless of how you got in it, everyone has to pay.
Yep.
And that's the crazy thing about it.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, this is, I can't say enough about, like, the we can argue about the minutiae of the Todd and then, like, the little, like, those, the nuts and bolts pieces. And I do think there's a good argument that says that it's sometimes can not be, or sometimes it goes quick in order to get to the big picture, and so those nuts and bolts don't always add up. But this is this scene right here is why I love Breaking Bad. This scene put it in the essence. Indeed, I actually enjoy these scenes a whole lot more than the gunfire scenes and like all the other stuff. Like, to me, this is Breaking Bad, and this is a writing team that is completely in control of the Walt character. Like, we can argue, like, Jesse, sometimes they don't know what to do, Jesse, go do drugs, cry for a while. You know, like we need you to be separate from Walt, do something right here. Skyler, you be crazy for 6 episodes or something like that. But with Walt, they are in complete control of Walt and know exactly what they're doing in every single step of Walt's actions. And what I got out of it is, like, and I said this to Cyril, like, when we were talking about the last episode, is like, I, out of respect for the show, I can't stand Walt. I can't wait for Walt to die. I cannot wait for him to die. Like, that is what the show is pushing. But in this moment, and me and Cyril, we argued back and forth, but Cyril was like, yeah, Walt's going to be on Heisenberg and he's going to go after him. I was like, who? How? How is he going to do any of this? He's broken. This is his destruction. And in that kind of like that quick moment where it's just like Walt is there coughing, and then the thing I love is just the look Saul gives him. Just like,
Please.
I'm out. Like, and not even like, please, like, just like, you're sad. like, in that moment, like, that look said everything about Walt. It said, you're delusional, you're sad, you're breaking down. And not only that, for all the stuff that you say that you care about your family, you don't give a about them. Otherwise, you would do this. It'd be a no-brainer if you care. But you don't really care. It's all about you. It's all about your pride. And I'm out. Deuces. Deuces. Saul is probably going to get off the smoothest out of everybody because he heeded the advice that he never heard from oh, why am I blanking on his name? Our man. The old, yeah, Mike. When Mike says, you're a ticking time bomb, I don't want to be anywhere near you when it goes off.
Yep.
So, the scene... What I love about this scene is Saul, from the standpoint of, and here's the thing about Saul, he's a sleazy lawyer, he's funny as hell, but since his character was introduced in season 2, he is always, in times of crisis, when the issues hit the fan, he's always given the best advice. He's always given the best advice. You can go wherever, again, whenever there's been a crisis situation where stuff is, again, he's, to me, Other than the time that the new place that he was going to choose for them to cook in season 5, where he's going to choose, and they were going through places. But putting that aside, and again, he's been good in these type of situations of giving the advice like, look, you know, maybe, you know, we remember Rob beforehand, maybe a couple seasons ago when he's telling Walt, maybe it's time to retire. In season 4, he tried to get Walt to retire. That's when Walt threatened him, like, it's not over until I say it's over. And that would have been a perfect time for Walt to retire. So Saul, through his own sleaziness and how quick it is of a lawyer, does know when it's time to give in. He is pragmatic from that standpoint. So that's what I loved about this scene, how consistent they've stayed with Saul. And again, he gives to me the best advice on the show, as far as, and we talk about all these crazy characters and how off and on they can be, Walt and Jesse and Skyler. Saul is the voice. He's the voice of reason on this show, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of the underworld. So that's what I liked about this scene. And again, that look when he said, "Man, it's over." Like, yeah, it's over. So we move on now to Skyler in the DEA's office, and at this point, Skyler is just in a zone. You know, the first 30 seconds of the scene, you can't even hear what they're saying because it's through her perspective. She's not even barely listening to what they're saying. and they basically, you know, basically come at her in terms of, you know, we need information on your husband. She says she doesn't know where he's at, which is true. And they basically have, like, basically, they basically have nothing in terms of trying to get out of her. They basically, that tree is basically dry. And, again, in that scene, Skylar looked just done. She looked like a shell of herself. She just looked out of it. So what were your thoughts on that particular scene?
Yeah, I'll start this off because I don't necessarily think I need to go into detail.
Yeah,
but I'll go into it much more on other things. This is the consequences. This is what
yep.
this is. It's the consequences of her action harking all the way back when she hires that lawyer and tells the lawyer, you know, my husband's a drug dealer, and the lawyer says, this is a no-brainer. Get out, tell the police, get your family away from him. Like, why are we even having any more of a conversation than that? And so ever since then, she has been a unwitting participant to a witting participant to even the point where she's like, hey, you need to go and murder Jesse. These are the consequences of it. And the consequence of her not doing that. And so she's paying the price.
Yeah. And the only thing I'll add to that, just piggybacking on what Rob said, is, and I spoke with Sap about this this past weekend, that I had some anger from the last episode with Marie forgiving Skylar so quickly after she helped participate in that blackmail video. But I think it speaks to the point, like you said, about consequences, because although Marie did forgive her, she still has to pay.
Yeah.
And there's no way of escaping it, you know, and that's why, yeah, she is a shell of herself. And, you know, as we find out later, it's only going to get worse.
Go ahead.
No, but so that was my whole thing. Like many people, I've never been a big Skylar fan anyway. But it was almost satisfying to find her so helpless because, like you said, she really didn't know where Walt was anyway. Like, she really was useless. And that's how we leave her there.
So, and that's a good segue into our next scene. So they're doing the stakeout. Of course, the DA is staking out Skylar's place. She's smoking a cigarette and has a drink in her hand. And all of a sudden, she goes and checks on Holly, baby Holly. And you have Todd and two other goons in her house. Todd, who, again, if there's an acting class for sociopaths, he aced it. This dude, like, yeah, he's scary. So Todd, basically, the motivation of this, of course, was Todd wanting to make sure, you know, try to find out what Skylar knew about Lydia, or to send a message to Skylar. Listen, we know you're talking to the police. We respect your husband. We understand you had to do what you had to do, but you don't need to mention ever Lydia's name. And basically, Skylar is terrified, and Todd and company, you know, leave her be after he makes the particular threat in terms of talking about Lydia, and also not to talk furthermore to the cops. And that was that particular scene. Jack?
Yeah. Okay, so I'll be quick on this. Now, once I got past their ability to get into the house,
Once I got past that,
we got two missing DEAs. I'm sure the house is definitely taped. Once I got past that, somehow, there are certain things I did like about this scene. And one, I thought it was interesting that we find Skylar at the beginning of the scene smoking and having a drink. And I just think that that's when you settle into the ish that you're in. She was having that moment where, you know what, really couldn't even get any worse, and don't know where to go until you go to that next room and see how much worse it could get.
Yep.
And I think Like I said, the things that I hate about the show, they never are trumped by the things that I love about the show. And sometimes, you know, the direction and the angles they have are perfect and so fitting. Like when I watched Todd in this scene, it reminded me of like when I was watching The Last Batman when the criminals are actually pulling him out the house. Like it gave me that type of chill, like, wow. Because I just didn't see this coming. So, you know me, I'm a dark person. I needed him to kill her. I just, once again, going back to the loose end thing, but I just, you know, once again, she was in a situation where she was telling the truth. You know, she didn't mention Lydia's name or whatever, but I think this scene was really more about, surreal to your point earlier, which I wish they had went that angle, about just how psychotic, you know, Todd is. And I think they couldn't have got a better actor, not even just from what he delivers.
This dude is killing it. He's killing it.
Yeah, not even just from what he delivers, but just his physical makeup. He's emotionless.
Yeah.
He's emotionless. You know what I mean? He's like Matt Damon without any expression. You know? And when you see this dude and the way he says it, so matter-of-factly, his tone never changes. He's having the most dreadful, scary conversation you could possibly tell a mother. And just, you know, very calm. Like, okay, just making sure. All right. And it was just like he dominates the scene when you see him, and it's just like you are immediately drawn to whatever he's after. So I loved it, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think a continuation of consequences and the ramping up of consequences. But I too, thought about the FD, so I want to give a nod. I thought about that as well. That's one of those nuts and bolts things that can happen. So I want to give a nod to that. But I thoroughly, I mean, I echo everything that was said, absolutely, about Todd. And I agree, it's about Todd. But it's just like, I literally, like, was sitting there watching it. She goes in there, and they're there. I literally was like, oh, my God. Like, those moments I don't have in TV a lot. And so it's just like you said, like, I just didn't see that coming at all. Just didn't see it coming at all. And then not only to go, because TV can give you some oh, my God moments and just be like, oh, that was just for the sake of being an oh, my God moment or like a shocking moment. But then, like, the cool, cold, killer, matter-of-fact delivery after that just made, like, that moment just last. It just lasts. So, yeah, that's all I have to add.
And sorry, I'll just say one more thing real quick. The one compliment I have to give to Skylar is, or maybe to the show, is that as good as they are with Walt, which is definitely their, you know, thumbs up there, but they just know characters. They know characters. And watching Skylar in this scene, as we found her useless or helpless or whatever, you see just the power of a mother. For her to be in that scene and to keep her composure, you know, didn't scream, she took a big step. And she understood it, you know, and there's been times repeatedly with her where the circumstances seem way bigger than her, but she gathers herself. She gathers herself, and she just faces it. So that's one thing I do respect about her.
Yeah, I did think, again, piggyback off what you said, Chad, I did think at first, like, how in the world did they get into the house without the DEA noticing that. But then I thought about, again, consistency of the show. Skylar's not Marie, so she's not the wife. She's the wife of a dealer. She's not the wife of a fallen DEA agent. I would have had a much, much bigger. I couldn't believe the fact that they would let anybody get Marie's house without them seeing it from the back or from whatever. So that probably was their B team, clearly. That was their B or maybe even their C team. So from that standpoint, it does make sense that that Todd and company would be able to get into her house, because she doesn't, she's not as important to them as a Marie, considering who Marie is. So I think that, I think they can clean that up with, you know, criticisms for that, you know, can kind of be cleaned up through that. And you can still disagree with it, with them being able to get in that easy. But I thought about that just now. Again, just like Todd, and like, you know, he's matter of fact, is no ifs, ands, or buts about him. You understand where he's coming from always. Like, there's no BS with Todd. That's what I like about his character. This is, you know, this is it. All right, Jesse, you're going to cook. If you don't cook, then we have this picture of Brock and Andrea. It's just that simple. It's just no, it's no, that's it. Like, he, you know, he lays it out for, lays it out there, hey, we respect your husband, but you need to shut up and not say anything else again, ever, basically. And that's it. There's no, you know, there's no BS with Ty. That's what I love about this, love about his character. Love about that particular character. So we move to another Ty scene with he and Lydia at the same restaurant, of course, where Lydia has met Mike in the past and also has met Walt. She comes in with these, again, these big-ass Jacqueline Onassis glasses. And Todd, and she's trying to sell Todd on killing Skylar. Todd relays the message that, hey, I think, you know, Skylar was scared. I think she got the message. You don't have anything to worry about. Lydia, of course, who want Lydia, when Lydia wants somebody dead, she wants them dead. There's no discussion about it. So then Lydia tells Todd that she's basically out the business. You know, good luck with the rest of your chemicals and what have you. And then Todd, you know, Todd tells her about the 92% cook that he had with Jesse. And despite the fact that this is where Lydia slips, this is where Lydia slips. Despite the fact that she says, hey, they're looking for Pinkman too. That would have been the rational, logical thought, but all she heard was despite that thought, all she heard was 92%. When she heard 92%, then that took over all her, took over her thoughts, and she was basically at that point, you know, was going to stick with Todd and future cooks. So, what was our thoughts on that particular scene?
Yeah, I'll be brief on this one. And,
yeah, go ahead.
And I hate to keep going back to, you know, Rob's initial point about consequences, but this whole show, the heart of it is about morality, you know.
Yep.
And when you're talking about the rational thing to do, there's been plenty of scenarios where rational things would have made sense, of course, but then you have greed. And when he said that 92%, you know, immediately she just started thinking about what she can do. She wasn't even talking to him anymore. Her mind just completely went to the 92. Ty wasn't even there. Now, so that's all I have with that. The only other thing I wanted to say is, for me, this scene was comical. It was just comical. As you said that she came in there with these big glasses or whatever, she's so unnecessarily extra. And she drew more attention talking to him the way she was.
Right.
The way they
yeah.
were seated, for him to have to turn to her in this awkward position, he's smelling her back. I mean, it was just funny to me. It's just funny to me because she tries so hard to be calculated and inconspicuous that she's always a suspect. She's always a suspect through her nervous action. And I just found it funny, and I definitely think the writers did that on purpose, of course, but I just found it very funny watching this episode and him like, okay, so you're not going to sit with me. I'll just lean over awkwardly and have this discussion about drugs with you.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was funny.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to go a little bit deep here. That entire scene and, like, the awkwardness of everything that you're saying, what I got out of it was, like, It's like what you said, Chad, this whole thing is about morality, right? And all of this, everything, and I think this was some of Chad's initial vibes with it, but this entire show is about Walt. It is all about Walt. I mean, like, that has been his egotistical statement, but it is. This entire show is about him. And so what that scene did was just kind of like, dude, served two purposes. One, to kind of like reflect back that beginningness with Jesse and Walt, like how awkward and just awkward, that's the perfect word, it was with them. But the ties that bind all of this together is money and is greed. And people who would never, ever, ever be in each other's universes or any other's universes because of this allure of more and more and more money. And that just in case we were forgetting, like, again, like how, like, Walt's morality and what his play was for all of this, this is about Walt's faults as his incredible faults as a human being and his incredible faults in terms of the perception of what money will do for his life, which we'll get into even in depth as we go into another scene that I love.
Yes. Don't give too much away.
I don't. I just said we're going to.
So then we move on to the scene where Walt has been shipped or driven to New Hampshire in a propane tank, which I found out. In a propane tank. Of course, he had to go 2 days after. 2 days after Saul, you know, went to Nebraska. So Walt arrives in New Hampshire with the cleaner. The cleaner, you know, brings him, has his groceries. He has a multiple source of groceries. He explains to him, look, you know, Walt, you have no internet, you have no electricity, no car, no, you just here. And by the way, you have a DVD of Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium. Two copies.
Right? Yeah.
So Walt is, you know, to say, you know, Walt is still, of course, in pseudo Heisenberg mode. I have business to conduct. And the dude's like, Walt, again, we're trying to keep you out of handcuffs. That's the whole object of this. And the cleaner basically lays it out for Walt. Like, look, you leave the reservation, then you will get caught, and then I have to just disassociate myself with you. So, you know, you do what you do. So he then leaves Walt, you know, tells him about the food and the steaks and, you know, the gas heater and what have you, and says, you know, I'll be back in another month and what have you, and then goes about his business. What were our thoughts?
I'll start this one off.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is another one of like, and this is what I like so much about these last few episodes, but this episode in particular, because you have these awful scenes that happen, and then you have these much quieter scenes that are like feeding you the meat of this show. And what I found fantastic about this scene is, you know, Walt loves to fashion himself as fiercely independent and able to make his own moves. But he is completely dependent upon this person, even in spite of himself, because of what he's done, because of his fierceness. He is now completely, completely dependent on this person. And not even completely dependent on this person. Like, your life, if we would call it a life, is going to consist of staying in this cabin. And that's how you will not be caught. He literally cannot go anywhere else. Otherwise, he will be out there. And he'll be also out of this other person. And then I think the second piece that is so great about these kind of scenes right here is just like, this is like the beginning of, this is like the right at the beginning in this episode of showing you Walt's kind of the deconstruction of the Heisenberg myth. I said, me and Cyril were talking about this, And I always said, like, you, like, walk and the way that the writers presented it, but not really, but how Walt believed it, because you always wanted to be like, oh, there's Walt and there's Heisenberg. No, those two are the same. There's no difference in it. It's just Walt's ego acting out. And so this is the beginning pieces of just completely tearing that ego away and revealing him for what he truly is and for what he truly will be.
Yeah. You said everything, and I definitely wanted to say. So you went the route of using the word independent. I had two different thoughts, very similar, though. And my first one was just control. Same thing with the independence. It was the same, the biggest issue he had about the cancer, about someone being able to tell him or dictate when he leaves this earth, or he wanted to go out his way and all this other stuff, why he didn't want to do the treatment. So he has control issue. But I think what I like about the writing of this scene was just how literal it was. Walt is a perfect person of convenience. Everything is always on his convenience and his terms. So to put him in the most inconvenient situation, and not just a situation, to transfer him to the inconvenient situation in the most inconvenient way, you know,
yeah.
To get, you know, this propane tank, no internet, gas stove. I mean, it's just like it was a perfect setup. And also, it's like he's punch drunk because he still, as he puts on his hat, he goes outside, he storms out. He just doesn't get it. And he has these moments of realization once he gets over himself. But I think to Rob's point, there really is no separation. You know, I used to always tell people, like, you know, the saying money changes people. It doesn't. It exposes you, you know.
Yeah.
And that's all that's happened with the situation of him becoming this drug lord, kingpin, or whatever. It exposes him. It exposed him. It's kind of like, you know, to take a quote from the late, great Biggie Smalls, never get high on your own supply. And I think that's why you have someone like a Saul or Mike who, they live these lifestyles, but it doesn't dictate who they are.
Yep.
At the heart, these are good people that did bad things, like I said before. You know what I mean? Mike cared about his niece and, you know, wanted to give money to her, or granddaughter, whatever she was. And, you know, Saul's a guy, a regular person. But with Walt, his own supply, and that's what it's so, it's so many things to pull from it. And the hypocrisy is, as many times as he's lectured Jesse on going back to drugs and everything, his drug is power.
Yep.
His drug is power. And he gets high off of this, and it just takes him to this whole other place that's completely irrational and just great. So I thought it was just a really, really dynamic scene.
Yeah, this was the second time in the episode that Walt reached back for the fastball. It just wasn't there. First time, of course, going at the Saul, and started coughing. Yeah, this time, he goes, you know, got, you know, like you said, flips the hat up, and they play the music, the Heisenberg music, walks to the gate tomorrow. Like, yo, dude, come on. Like, yeah, at that point, like, you know what I said?
I absolutely love that.
I said, Walt, you know what I said to myself? I said, Walt, sit your ass down. Go back.
Sit your ass down, man.
You're not going nowhere. You got the hat.
Not going nowhere.
Tomorrow. I love that scene. Walt, like I said, Walt, for the first time in a long time, Walt is powerless. Absolutely powerless, has no control, and is facing the reality of that situation. So then we move on to the next scene. You have Jesse, who has a paperclip that he has first of all, Jesse, stop. I know.
Anybody have a problem with this? What? No? I found that totally reasonable.
Jesse has a paperclip that he has
you know, obviously picked the lock of his handcuffs, and he's trying to escape, and he hears Todd coming, so he falls down and what have you, and then puts the handcuffs back on without Todd noticing anything. So Todd comes in, hey, Jesse, you want some ice cream, buddy? And, you know, brings two or three different flavors of ice cream for Jesse. Jesse takes the ice cream and then asks Todd to leave the top open. Todd obliges, and then Jesse, of course, tries to escape to no avail. Of course, to no avail, as he did not see the camera, And at that point, Jesse is, you know, just take me now. You know, you know, I'm not going to work for you, psycho F's. Shoot me. And that, you know, and shoot me, and we'll talk about what happens next. But at this point, Jesse tries his escape. I thought, you guys can give your thoughts, but I thought that he actually was going to escape. But that was this particular scene.
Right.
Yeah. There was. Go ahead, Jack. Go ahead, because I know.
I'll be quick. And this goes back to what I said earlier, like. You have to watch Breaking Bad with a preface. There has to be a disclaimer out there. Before you, like if people hear about the show, whoever hasn't watched it, before you hear everything about the show, just watch it for entertainment. That's all I say. Watch it for entertainment. Just enjoy the hell out of it. But these moments with Jesse, you know, he picks the lock. I think he actually picked the lock twice. he picks the lock, you know. And good old Uncle Jack, surreal. Earlier, I let it slide that you try to use the whole, well, that's his nephew angle. So
right. Maybe
that's why he didn't kill him. Like,
right.
I'm a killer. My nephew knows I'm a killer. He'll get over this, and we'll go see. That's
okay. How
I see it. I'm all about consistency. Like, I'm really not worried about your feelings. You know, just we got to make this money. I got $80 million sitting here. I don't know why we continue to do this stupid stuff. Anyway, well, whatever. Everything's believable, I guess. So this time with Jesse, I mean, sorry, nephew, I have to kill this man. I have to kill this man this time. Like, you come on. We have to do this. I wouldn't even look at you. Like, the way that scene was supposed to go, Uncle Jack pulled up his rifle. He pulls a cigarette out. He looks at Ty, and Ty does the Kanye shrug. And like, you know, what do you do? Sorry, Jesse. Bam, Jesse dies. So, since none of that happened, I, for my own sanity, made this scene once again about Todd. Todd giving Jesse ice cream. And I just loved it because Todd is being crazy. He has this dude chained up, tortured, with this picture of this girl and this boy that he doesn't think he'll ever see again anywhere. And he says, hey, man, you want some ice cream? Yeah, I'll get a tarp up. Whatever. So for me and my sanity, that scene was all about Todd and not the nonsense that they continue to do with Jesse. I feel like this show is going to have a show on its own. There's going to be a tell-all story about the writer's room of Breaking Bad. Because there's one writer in there that's like, Jesse should have died 2 seasons ago. They wouldn't let me do it. There's going to be one writer that said, I never want to do this shit. They made me do it. But there's no way in hell. I mean, Jesse told us this last year at the Golden Globes. Said, thank you for keeping me. I'm like, Jesse, you're not supposed to say. They were like, shut up, Jesse. Like, I don't know what the hell he knows. But there is no, this dude is a cat. I think we're going to find out Jesse's a real-life cat next episode.
I'm glad you said cat, because I will discuss that later. Go ahead, Rob.
I'm done. It was all behind
me. I said, go ahead, Rob. Yeah. I know you were
I will. I'll let that stand. I actually don't have a retort. I was very amused that Jesse could pick the lock. I was very amused at that. I just want to talk about the next scene. So,
all right, yeah, go ahead. All right, listen. I thought
I thought that they were gonna kill him. I really did. I thought at this point.
I knew he wasn't gonna. I was just like, I knew he wasn't gonna get away.
I knew he wasn't getting away because that was just he's not that easy. Because I saw that even before I saw the camera, I saw that gate. I'm like, he ain't gonna be able to climb with that big ass gateway out there. See, I'm like, come on. So, but this to me, and this again, consistency as far as Jesse. This is a typical Jesse move. Jesse does these impulsive moves without thinking. He's been doing it forever. You're just gonna do it, despite what you've been through. But Jesse is an impulsive person. We've seen it throughout the course of the show. I can give you two or three scenes that stand out that he's been impulse problems, and yeah, he needs somebody with him to be like, Jesse, calm down. Let's think this through. So this was perfect for that in terms of that. Moving on to the next particular scene where Jesse would pay for this.
You gonna let that slide, Chad? You gonna let that?
I don't even know how to speak with that BS.
This had nothing to do with speaking. And not acknowledge.
First of all, you got a group of Nazis, killers after you. There's no such thing as impulse. There's no logic. You can get the hell out if you can. So there's no thinking this through.
The impulse doesn't it doesn't factor in to how we pick. How does he know how to pick? That's the precision move. That's not about impulse control. Like, if I have impulse control, I can suddenly pick cuffs and like, no. It was a quick cutter to get us to the next scene.
Right. But I feel like, I feel like the risk versus the reward, I'm like, dude, they've shown you a picture. They've shown you a picture of Brock and Andrew for a reason. That wasn't just
okay,
a picture.
Okay, you know what's real? Okay, now you're making me do. This is what you're making me do. This is what you're making me do. And this is what I didn't want to do. I know I won't be invited back on this show. So to the few people that feel me out there, you can email me. But this is what I have to say to you. When I say watch the show for entertainment, you are the type of people that make it hard because you argue shit that you shouldn't argue. You just have to let some go. Like when you said that, I let it go earlier. When you said that bullshit about, Skyler, her husband wasn't a DEA agent, so I can see. What the hell? Her husband is from the drug lord. You don't think her house is worth just as much? Come on. Like, stop feeding me BS. Just say, unbelievable, but moving on. Stop trying to make it all make sense, because that's not fair. That's not fair. Just say it doesn't make sense. That's all.
Yeah.
It's that simple. It's that simple.
You said, I mean, it made sense for him to try to break out. Yeah, it did make sense, because to his character.
What we're saying is he would never even broke out the lock twice. Where did he learn this magic?
He can't pick a lock? That's not realistic. He can pick a handcuffs, a lock? I believe he could. I don't think that's crazy that he could pick a handcuffs.
What's that crazy?
Is that unrealistic? I don't. clearly, he's had some experience doing it before. I don't think that's unrealistic. But we're gonna move on. So we go to the next scene where
he's on that ledge alone, folks. That's all I'm saying.
I'm by myself with that. That's fine. I'll be by. So we move on to the next scene with Uncle Jack and Todd who take a trip to Andrea's house and Jesse also as well. Take a trip to Andrea's house. Again, Todd was the man in the scene. He talks to Andrea and says, hey, you know Jesse? Do you know Jesse? She says, yes. And keep in mind, Andrea hasn't seen Jesse probably in a couple of weeks, couple of months. So she certainly was anxious to basically see him. She steps out, her doorway. And, of course, he says, in typical Todd fashion, this is not personal, and kills her for Jesse to see. And Jesse just goes into a... tantrum of epic proportions, understandably, and just
just goes nuts basically. And then I like this from Uncle Jack, you know, take it easy, you know, we got the sun, we can kill the sun too, basically telling him to calm down after Todd gets back into the car. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm going on this scene. So we had a lot of laughs on that last scene. quite honestly, for me, this was the hardest scene to watch.
Go ahead.
And for so many different reasons. And, just for so many different reasons. So I'll just outline them just because it's almost emotional for me. One, as, like, a fan of the show and as a fan of, I'll break it down. Let me stop. Even as someone who considers himself, like I do, a very critical consumer of television, there's just something innate in us that wants the people that we like to come out ahead. And to me, this scene was a punch in the gut as a Jesse fan who wants to see Jesse kill Walt. Like even up until this moment, I'm still in my head trying to figure out how does Jesse get away and how does he kill Walt, like everything. And this scene just punched me right in my gut because it's like, no. This isn't about Jesse getting Walt or anything like that. Jesse's going to pay, period, in the sentence. And it's not going to be pretty. There's no Jesse comes out, and, or at least for me, like this kind of like silence, like Jesse coming out and like, you know, the dawn and there's a sunshine moment, something like that. Just that, all of that is gone. It might happen, but I don't anticipate it happening at all. I just anticipate pain for Jesse from this, like, not to this point. Like, it's just like, so that made me give up that dream of mine. Like, it's gone. Like, it's not, no. The second thing is, like, even in a show as dark as Breaking Bad, this was out of control, dark. This was out of control, dark, because that's not supposed to happen in television. An innocent bystander who's just minding her own business, trying to do right with her life for her son, isn't supposed to die off the tangential consequences. Like, we should wrap our heads around Skyler. We should wrap our heads even around Hank, even though that was a big move. You know, we can write that's just part of the game of being in the drug. You can die any minute. We can wrap our minds around Gus. We can wrap all of our minds around that. You just can't wrap your mind around her just getting shot. And not only that, just in the quiet nature of it. It was just like that scene is chilling. It's chilling. That's all I have to say. It's just chilling taking the silence out of there and just seeing it happen. I still have that. I had that image with me as I slept last night. It's crazy. So for two reasons, that was hard for me. That was hard. That's all I have to say right now.
Okay. It's funny that you say that. I bet, you know, a lot of reviews on this scene in particular. And everyone I've talked to about it, they share Rob's sentiment completely. And I get what it means for you and Jesse, as far as, like, even as a fan to see him beat Walt. It's just, at this point, that's not enough. But for me, honestly, and I don't think I'm a callous person, but
yeah,
the scene didn't.
Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe. The scene did absolutely. And Tiff was here watching it. She felt everything you said. I said, I know where I was feeling what you said. I knew what it was going to be. I felt nothing at all. And the reason I felt nothing at all. And I think my danger with certain things with writing is even when you, it's like when you the adrenaline starts pumping, and then you really get yourself in this box, in this corner, from so many things you've done with a character. And it gets to a point for me where I become numb. And I'm like watching this scene, prior scenes and the other earlier episode, last episode, and this episode, with Jesse looking like he's in the set of Saw in this torture chamber, and his face is all messed up, and everything that Jesse's going through. I just found it unnecessary at this point, but necessary. And it's necessary for me because my whole thinking of what I want for Jesse completely changed in that moment. When she died, I was like, I just want him to die. And I felt like, you know, talking about stabbing you and then twisting the knife in there, like, it was, like, dumb. She's like, where? Okay. She's looking out the damn. She might as well got off the step. I mean, like, oh, okay. Jesse doesn't answer the door. This the weird dude you never met say, oh, yeah, Jesse's in the car. And all of this stuff happening. And for them to think that he's going to cook now after you, he has nothing to live for. Jesse has nothing to live for what I've witnessed, you know. So I honestly want him to be taken out of his misery. I definitely don't want Walt to be the one. But it's just like I've seen so much at this point with Jesse's character that I just don't even feel emotions anymore. Like, when she got shot, yeah. But then when I saw him screaming in the car, I'm just like, is this where they segue? Oh, throw in a scene with Jesse screaming somewhere. Like, because I'm seeing it happen. It happens so often that I just don't feel it anymore. You know, he might have another scene next week. I'm sure. I'm sure it's going to be at least three scream scenes with Jesse. And it's just like, I can't feel it anymore. I just can't feel it. The dagger for me is like when you go, when I said about get high on your old supply, you go too far as a writer. The dagger for me was when Walt told him that I watched, you know what I mean? That was enough. That was enough. You know, I witnessed her. I watched her die. I could have, you know, I could have helped or whatever. But, like, they just keep going further and further and further. And Jesse's character, honestly, has nothing to give. He has nothing to give. You know, but I get it. Like you said, there's consequences. And I think you said we haven't witnessed this, but I think because you're dealing with, now this hasn't been the first show dealing with drugs, but going from a morality standpoint, in the drug game, you're going to pay, and you're going to pay in the worst ways. And that's why I thought even the shootout, which I found comical, that you're at, they're that close to them, and no one kills anyone until they have to execute Hank the way they did. I found that unnecessary to see Hank go out like that. But I think that it's necessary for the points that they're trying to draw. So in the world of drugs, we see this in the news every day. Innocent people die.
Yeah.
This is not just a story anymore. This is not a show. So, that's something that is real. That is something that is real. Okay, nephew, I can't kill him. You know what? I'm killing his girl then because he's playing around. So I can believe that part of it. But I'm very interested and intrigued to see, because, like, do I even think with Jesse cooking his 92% that he can function? Do I think that he can actually function to cook something? I find that very hard to believe.
No, here's why he's gonna cook if he does have another cook, you know Brock. He's gonna cook as Brock.
I know it's the same thing, but yeah,
he's gonna you're gonna cook. If they now if they kill Brock and the girl, then it's been like Jesse's been useless at that point. Yeah, this is why I text at WTF. S, shaking my head. This I actually jumped up. I was like, yo, what? Like, this one I didn't see, even though I should have saw coming after what happened. I didn't expect it. I did not expect it at all. This girl's recovering addict. She got her life together. I started thinking about what, how far she had came as a character in terms of her character on the show. I'm like, yo, what? She raising her son. I like kids. I'm like, yo, what? Why are you getting killed? I was like, this is why I was like, it got personal for me. I understand the writing, but I was like, yo, this, like, fuck you, Jesse. This is why I say, excuse me to my audience. That's why I was saying with Jesse. I'm like, yo.
It's a TVMA show.
I'm going to Jack and him to smack Jesse. Like, yo, shut up. Stop screaming at that point.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, you got this girl killed.
Here we go.
Like, you got this
beautiful
girl.
Beautiful. And I think that's why. I mean, like, this scene, I've been waiting to talk about this scene. I want to talk. I almost feel like we could spend an entire show on this scene because, like, for that exact reason and to elicit emotion. Because, again, like, I'm, like, this show is about Walt. Like, we can't ever forget this. This show is about Walt and the ripples of the consequence, or the ripples of his decision, and how far those ripples have spilled out, and it's that same reaction. I think is just like how you feel about Walt. It's 6 degrees of separation, right? It's the game. It's Jesse got her killed for bringing her in. Walt got her killed for bringing her in. Like, it, this whole thing is like, and this is the part, like, when I was sitting back and I was reflecting on this scene, but the show in particular, it's just like no show has, at least that I know of, has gone there to the extent of, like, if you thought there was anything glitzy, glamorous, whatever about this lifestyle, we're going to show you how horrible, how absolutely horrible it is. I actually don't think it has. I don't think this has a function on another cook at all. I don't think a cook is going to happen. I'm not even thinking about that. I think this was one to help bring. If you didn't know it by now, you knew it for sure at that moment that this is awful. What is going on? This is all awful. None of nothing. This is awful. What is happening? And just how down and just painful life is and will be for Jesse. And I agree with you, Chad. I'm at a point where, and that definitely hit me. I'm just at a point where, kill everybody. Let's go. Let's put everybody out of their misery on this, because this is too hard. I can't even imagine who dies next episode. It's just...
Yeah.
It's not too hard. It's a wow.
Now, I'll go back real quick, for real, if I can, to the point you said about what you felt about Jesse in that moment. And it goes back to what we've been talking about with morality and consequences, but also accountability. Because without accountability, you have misplaced anger. With Walt, what happened, you know, when he has his Jesse moment, when he witnesses Hank die like that.
Right, he blames Jesse.
You would think the pain is just, man, I caused this, right? You would think that. But right after that, he says, you guys owe me one more thing, as he looks at Jesse under the car.
Right.
That's the reason Hank died. And no accountability for your actions. And therefore, you put this anger towards someone else. So I don't think you're necessarily wrong to be mad at Jesse for this. But like Rob said, everyone is connected to Walt. You know,
no question.
You know, and I think that's what, you know, from a writing standpoint, you love it because it's the same thing in a house. Like, you're going to have some times that are hard or good or whatever, but it's better than having blah moments. And to evoke emotions out of your audience is what you ultimately want to do. Whether they love you or hate you, that you want them to feel something. You know,
so,
because that's what... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish up.
No, I'm saying because that's where you have in life these teachable moments. So to the audience or whoever, I don't want to... misconstrue this for just a morality show about drugs. It's just about choices you make, period. Whatever
yeah.
the vices are.
Yeah.
Whatever the vices are. So, it's, you know what I mean? For whoever you're dealing with, like you saw Skylar, I always had a problem with her not having to deal with the infidelity issue. Like, Walt felt bad for drugs and really kind of just let that go more than your average man would have been able to let it go because of what he was doing. But it still brings up that, and I'm not saying that that's why she is where she is, but everything's connected. Everything's connected with these people making these decisions. And unfortunately, the selfishness when you're making a decision, you're only thinking about if you get caught, how it affects you or whatever. You're not thinking about all the innocent people around you in those moments of greed or irrational behavior or whatever.
Even with that, the infidelity choice, you know, that cost, obviously, Walt kind of not put that aside because of what he was dealing with, but that contributed to Ted getting and being in a coma, getting him involved. So that had its consequences
right.
as well. So we got a big scene coming up. This next scene, Walt. I'm assuming that this next scene, fast forward, is about a month or two. Walt's in the cabin. He has long hair. All his hair is grown back. He has this long ass beard. And the cleaner returns for his monthly visit, brings his newspapers, his glasses, all the things like that, has a check-in, does his chemo off YouTube. And Walt right now is at, you know, he's at a low point right now. He's losing weight. He pays a cleaner $10,000 to stay an hour, probably the easiest $10,000 that a person will make. And the cleaner stays for an hour. And then, you know, when the cleaner leaves, the cleaner tells Walt about Skylar. Skylar is working as a taxi cab dispatcher. Part-time, by the way, not even full-time.
Part-time.
Yeah. Exactly. I love it.
No, life insurance for her.
Pennies. So baby Holly's staying with a neighbor. You know, Scott's working part time. He brings him his newspapers. He takes care of him. And then, you know, after the cleaner leaves, you have Walt laying on his bed, just looking god awful in his pajamas, ring losing weight. His ring falls off. He ties his ring around this piece of string to hang on his neck. And he decides at that point to take the box of insure and use that to put the money in, and decides to walk out of the cabin to the nearest to 8 miles to the nearest restaurant. So just, and we'll get to that, we'll get to the next scene, but just deal with this scene, seeing Walt in this particular state.
Right. I'll go first, Rob, and I'll be quick
yeah.
about this. I thought it was funny because it was sad. And I think it's kind of like any person who's lived a bitter life, they start to have these regrets or these remorse and think about things. Now, I'm not saying Walt was going there completely, but it's so funny that this person who always seemed to be so disinterested in other people was longing for companionship to the point where he's paying for it.
Ooh.
You know, we haven't seen it, so I can't say this, but I'm going to assume that Walt just doesn't strike me as a person who even cares about cards anyway. You know what I mean? The guy's just like, hey, let me just say, do you want to cut the deck? He doesn't care about the damn cards. I just want you here. I need someone around. And we'll speak to this other point I want to make, more so the last scene. But Walt, he feeds off of acknowledgement. He has to be acknowledged, and he has to be noticed. So I think that's more so with his angle of companionship. You know, he still has all the clippings of the how, what's going on with his family and everything, but he just has to be relevant. And I feel like, you know, he's like you said, he's losing weight, he's doing all this, and he's just a shell of himself at this point. Let me not say that because I don't think they said how much yet. But yeah, I'll speak to the money issue after that. But all in all, I just thought the scene was funny because I feel like the cleaner, in a sense, he reminds me of a little bit of Walt, not as far as being a jerk or ass or anything, but just no emotions in this. You know, when he says to him, if I die, you know, what's going to happen with my money? Are you going to give it to my family? He's like, you know, will you believe me if I tell you I'll give it to him or whatever? Like, what do you want me to say? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what do you want me to say? And it's like, he doesn't feed into this. He's like, yeah, you're sick. Yeah, time to get you your cancer treatment. But you're just a job for me. That's all this is. Sure, I'll stay. He didn't say I'll stay for free, you know, $10,000 or whatever. Whatever, I'll be here. I'll do an hour. You know what I mean?
Yeah, bro, that's what he's like, an hour.
Right. He didn't confirm if that would be $5,000 or not. He just said, I'll do an hour. I'll do an hour, you know. So I just found it just fitting that this is who he's spending his last moments with at this point.
Yeah. No, it's exactly, you know, it is a character stripped down to its bones. At the end of the day, all the stuff, all the illusions, all the grandeur, all of that is just a man with cancer who's dying and is dying alone by himself. And in his most vulnerable moment, even in his most vulnerable moment, he doesn't appeal to the fixer's humanity. He doesn't, I miss my wife and kids, and just, you know, like, this, it's just like, I'll pay you $10,000 to stay here with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just like, even stripped down to his, like, just the work, like, at the most vulnerable and just that you could possibly be, it ultimately goes back to, A, like you said, I need to be acknowledged. I need somebody to sit here in front of me. And then, two, I need to feel in control or feel powerful or whatever by using the only thing that I have left that feels powerful to me, and that's money.
Yep.
It was a very sad scene. It's funny, just like, kind of, you know, and we'll do a lot more of this next week, writing the memoratorium on the show, but it's just like, even in seeing it, it's still like, wow. You know, it's like, to see a character just stripped down is fairly just impressive to see. Just, yeah, the commitment mm-hmm. of this writing staff. Like I said, we can quibble about, like, all the different parts around Walt, but they have been in complete control of Walt from start to finish.
Agreed.
And what they have left us with, particularly in that scene, is just, I'm in awe of it. I was in awe of that scene.
So I think the key part of the scene to me was the thing that would lead to him walking out was when the cleaner did say, what do you think, as far as when he asked about his money. That's what I think got him like, yo, I need to do something here. I think that had he not said that, I think Walt would have just been content with just staying there. But I think once he realized that his money, and this goes back to his whole thing about money and power, once he realized that the fact that, you know what, the cleaner might get the rest of this, however, $6 or $7, $8 million I have left, let me you know, I got to do something. So I think that was, to me, the key part of the scene that would drive him into the next scene that we're about to go into. Walk.
Warren, before you go there, are you going to the next scene?
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to the next
real scene. Real quick. So one point off of what you're saying about the money, I definitely agree with that, driving him or motivating him to whatever the next scene brings us to, but for different reasons, going back to what we said about just acknowledgement. I feel like it wasn't that this guy would just have my money, but if I die and my money's gone, there's no record of me. Like, he has to be acknowledged for what he is, and he needs to make that drawn out at the end. One quick thing I'll say. Go ahead. What happened?
No, I was about to add on to that point because it's a great point. The theme of this season, of this half the season, is Remember My Name. So that's
right.
Perfect.
There you go. So the other thing I'll say, going back to, once again, the whole morality thing, and this is where the show comes full circle. So earlier we discussed, you know, digging the knife in deeper, the unnecessariness of certain things, Jesse Steen with Andrea, all that stuff. But there was a quick nugget in this scene where we laughed about Skyler, part-time taxi cab, whatever. What is it, operator?
Taxi dispatcher.
But,
yeah, taxi dispatcher.
Yeah, dispatch, right, dispatcher. But the funny thing is, the cleaner said she actually looks happy. He said this. He said she actually looked happy, though. And that was so important because what I love about this show, they don't write just the right.
Let me check that. He didn't say she looks happy. He said she looks good. So I don't
right.
know.
Right, well,
I don't,
yeah, well, good. Good. Yeah, good.
So maybe
baby's
he's
happy.
Thinking that she was
because,
her,
listen,
her facial
earlier you said that she just looked terrible, you know what I mean, where we saw her. For what I'm trying to say to you from a morality standpoint, I think the bigger scheme of things is that you don't find money, happiness in money.
Oh, okay.
Like, for her to be subjected to this type of job, but for him to say in the same vein,
good.
She looks good. And also that they're looking good without you.
Well, Yep.
And that's what the biggest issue he has. It's always about me. I'm going to do this for my family. Not we're going to do this for our family. Me. I'm going to bring everyone happy. I'm going to do everything.
That is a perfect segue into the next scene because Walt goes, he goes to the bar. He uses one of the bartenders as a, uses her as, quote unquote, Aunt Marie to call Walt Jr.'s high school. Walt Jr. gets on the phone and Walt speaks to Walt Jr., basically say, you know, how you doing, son? And goes into this, you know, whole spiel about, listen, I need you to get this guy, get one of your friends' address. I'm going to send you guys $100,000. And, you know, Walt goes into just pure pity mode, you know, feel sorry for me. I'm dying here. Goes into pure, again, manipulation, you know, Walt in terms of his manipulation, trying to get something out of his son and trying to make it seem like he's trying to do right by his family. And then his son, and again, this was great. I thought his son was tremendous in the scene because at first his son says, yeah, you're going to send this money. And I did not see this coming in terms of his son basically snapping on him, saying, hey, I don't care about your money. You're an a-hole. You had Uncle Hank killed. I don't, you know, why don't you just die? And basically, you know, blows Walt off. This prompts Walt to call the DEA and leave the phone off the hook. What were our thoughts on this particular scene?
Yeah.
They were two separate scenes. Okay. Let me see.
They were two separate moments in the same scene.
Yeah. No, sorry. I blended them all into one scene. Character stripped down, consequences of his actions, you know, everything that we have been saying, you know, family, even in, you know, the last moments, or even in the closing of the scene, it's still about him, still about his sense to be acknowledged. I know Chad wants to speak on it a little bit more. The value of the money, I thought, was the biggest part of that scene.
Yeah.
And just,
there you go.
And just like what that meant. So I'll let Chad get in on that.
Yeah, and like I said, you probably, you know, we can, you know, play off of each other on this one, but I thought it was, well, once again, besides, you know, morality and consequences, it just goes back to showing how delusional Walt is.
Yeah.
Like, Junior's response didn't surprise me at all, because first of all,
not at all.
Everything that he did, the placement is genius on the show. So as he's called down to the office, they don't call him Walt Jr. What do they call him? You know, they call
Flint.
Him by his street name. And I was
Flint.
I found that ironic. Flint.
Yeah.
They called him Flint. And I just felt that when I was watching, I said, wow, that's ironic. I don't ever call my nickname ever be called down to the principal. And I got called down to the principal plenty of times. But I didn't know that they would refer to you by nickname. But I just thought it was fitting because, to my point about not being surprised, Junior, if we talked about, you know, Walt and Heisenberg, all that, Junior left when Walt pulled the knife out on his mother.
Yes.
And that's when he was gone. This is no longer my dad. Leave. That was, he has nothing at all. And then what is so, you have to love Walt because he's so sick. How poor tasted, and this, I know it's not a word, how poor tasted is it for him to say Aunt Marie? Okay, clearly he can't think of any other woman, but this is the woman he chooses. This is who he chooses to use to trick his son into, well, not trick his son, trick the school into letting him speak with his son. And it's like, are you serious? And then the delusion is not only in thinking that, number one, I can somehow get this money to them, number two, that they care about this money, but number three, we're talking about $100,000? I just found it genius, once again, for them to write the amount of money it was.
Yep.
$100,000. Those are pennies.
Yep.
Those are pennies. You had $80 million. Then you had $11 million. I put this whatever money could fit in the insure box.
Yep.
And that just equated to $100,000. And I said, so yeah, you're still hanging with your friend. And it, what I love about it is, because I was reading the, you know, reviews, and someone was like, well, Walt really never loved Skyler. He always, you know, was with the other woman. He always cared about her, and I believe that. But they was like, well, the only person he ever loved was Junior. He never loved Junior? He despised him in the way I look at it. And I think he just didn't like him being crippled and having his name. I do. I just think that Junior was someone that he used it for convenient purposes. He was his son when it was convenient. He never looked at him like his son. And I think as a response, it's kind of like with kids and I should say this in the same, animals, the way they respond to their owner. As you look at the relationship, the Junior, Hank was his dad.
Yes,
Hank was
that's
Junior's
why he
dad.
Yeah, Hank was born.
And that's because he understood the relationship. It was just an understanding. He treated him more like a son. Walt never, he bought him a car or something or whatever, but he didn't have these moments with his son. You know, he wanted him to be his name, but he wasn't. And I think he despised that. So I thought it was great that he found a way to call him and for Junior to have this scene of finally really getting his feelings out. But the $100,000 just had me rolling. I'm like, at least if you're going to buy me, give me, you got to be at least $5 billion. Tell me something crazy. But $100,000 at this point with what we're doing, do you even know the life that we're living? But anyway.
And
so at this point.
Hold on really quick, because I do have something to add. What I thought was just like pure genius about the writing And what I thought about immediately when he said the 100,000, which is, I think, why it was important for them to put the dollar amount on, because it takes you all the way back to, I think it was season one, but probably season two, because season one was really short, where Walt is like, you know, how much money do I have to earn for my family? He tallies it up,
and it's
700, like it's like something like 762,000. He's like, that's what I need to earn in order to make my family safe. And then, like you said, not only did he go way past that amount, he was in the 80s of millions of dollars. And now, stripped down, again, back to that, kind of like stripped down, all he can offer. And again, that self-fulfilling need, like, I have to take care of my family. This is all he can offer is $100,000.
Yes. Yep. That did. That number, that made it. That's exactly right. That made that particular number important, bringing that number up. So we get to the final scene, and this was just a brilliant piece of writing here with this final scene. Walt is done at this point. Physically, mentally, he's ready to give up. He let the phone off the hook. He called the DEA in, gave him his name. Again, let the phone off the hook, enjoying some scotch. And one of our buddies comes up, Charlie Rose, comes up on television, and Charlie Rose happens to be interviewing a couple of old friends, of Walt's old friends, Gretchen and Elliot Schwartz, who, of course, he helped them build the company Great Manners, and helped them develop the ideal, end up becoming billionaires. Walt ends up a overpaid chemistry teacher. So Walt watches this, and they basically bury Walt. They say, you know, this is not the guy. They are trying to separate themselves from Walt, considering what has happened. So they, you know, they're donating this money to inner city in terms of drug abuse and things of that nature, which Charlie Rose calls them out on that, saying that it's clearly a publicity stunt, which it is. So they're basically saying, look, we don't have anything to do with Walt. He didn't have, you know, Charlie Rose says, you know, well, why did you name the company? You know, White is part of the name. He says, no, name is the only thing he had to do with the company. He had nothing else to do with the company. And they just basically throw Walt just under a bus, and, you know, Walt, you know, in their eyes almost never existed to them. So this, of course, drives Walt to this. This was the last straw for Walt. This drives him to just, this hits at his ego, it hits at his pride, and he decides to head out the bar before the cops get there. I have plenty to say about the scene. Go ahead, Chad or Rob.
You wanna start it off? Because I also have a lot.
Well, I start off. I don't have too much to say.
Go ahead.
I'll be quicker than both of y'all, I think. I mean, I thought it was great writing with this scene once again. It was different for me. The angle, I didn't necessarily see them throwing him under the bus. I did more so with Elliot, but I feel like Gretchen was coming from a sincere place, because even her last interaction with season 3, 2, whatever, with Walt, she saw this person that she didn't know, you know. So I think hers was from a deeper place, that this man, these acts that they're hearing about is just so far removed from the person that she was in love with. And that's only because they share a different connection. So I found, you know, her angle very believable, but ultimately, like you said, I mean, they do have to distance themselves from him and his actions. But I loved it because this, like, I was interested with Jesse a few episodes ago when he was supposed to meet up with Walt, and, you know, he thought Walt had a hitman there. He said, you know what, I know how I'll get him. I'll get him where he really lives. And I'm like, where the hell does Walt really live? Like, what is he talking about? And he was talking about money, but Jesse missed the point. It wasn't about money. He lives in his name. That's where Walt lives. So to reduce this man to a Lady Eloise, where you say he did nothing but simply contributed to the name, I mean, I was laughing so hard inside, because Walt is such a small man. He's such a small man. And by that, I mean he's very
insecure.
Trivial.
He's insecure.
He's trivial. And he's petty. And as a result, he can't walk away from a fight, even when no one's fighting. He just cannot walk away. And I think it was necessary to see that this is the thing. Not, once again, with this whole BS for anyone thinking it's about family. Not his son crying to him and let me figure out how to make that better.
Nope.
I'm over that. Oh, well, 100,000 more than me. You know, not about trying to see my daughter or wife or reconcile anything. The thing that's going to drive me back, F this cancer, I'll find a way, is for them to disgrace my name. So I love this for that reason. But that's all I have. That's all I have.
Yeah, I love this scene because the two different perspectives for the audience that Chad was talking about is Gretchen, of course, was Walt's lover, and again was Walt's lover. Elliot was more of it was his close friend, business partner. So they are two perspectives from that standpoint. And the thing that, other than disgracing his name, the thing that pisses Walt off in terms of what Gretchen said is when she mentioned, "I don't know this sweet gentleman," that pissed him off too, because Walt doesn't ever want to be known as a sweet, gentle person. He just doesn't. He views himself as this hardcore, you know, like living in the Heisenberg, and he to call him sweet, to say what he once was, and to say he was a sweet old man, set him off as well. But this was the last thing that Walt had in his mind. Look, you know, I've been stripped. They've taken my money. My family's gone. You know, Hank's gone. But I still was a part of building a billion-dollar company. I still had, and this had to be one of the last things that he could hold on to. Like, I still was a part of this. You know, so for them to go on national television and say that you didn't have any part of building this billion-dollar company, when he did, was just that, again, that hit him. That was personal. That was just great. It was a great scene. It was a great act. And Bryan Cranston, just his facial expression, you could see the horns coming out of his head. You can see the steam coming out of his ears when they said that. So that, from that standpoint, I love the scene. And it gave us another plot point for next week with Gretchen and Elliot. Sat?
Yeah. So here's what I mean. Like, so it is 3 for 3. Fantastic scene. Here's what I love about it, though. It harkens back to all, and I've said this to you before, Sorrell, like, when Walt gets vulnerable, that's when he's his most dangerous. Because it's like he gets vulnerable, he'll be, and then the next thing, he's cemented another plan. Like the two examples I have are when he was, after he got beat up by Jesse, and he's like has that vulnerable moment with his son. And then after that, he's off to hatching the plan.
Right.
When he was laid down in the on the bathroom floor and Skyler finds him, he's vulnerable with Skyler. And then the next morning, he's off and back to trying to cement his you know, hold on all things he considers powerful. And so I love the consistency of that. Walt has a vulnerable moment, and then next we're going to be off to the races on some. We'll get to that in prediction. The second thing I loved about the scene is, for me, they were mechanisms basically, and what they showed and what they exposed. Of course, I'm alluding back to what Tad was saying, was that this entire thing, all of this, has been about Walter's pride and how Walter views himself versus how the rest of the world views him. And how those two juxtapositions have led to all of this that has happened. And so I agree. It's kind of like with Cranston, it was that trance, that silent transformation that he was able to do from this weak and brittle, you know, ready to give up person to someone who's so enraged by sense of self and what he feels like he deserves, that it made the entire scene brilliant. And ultimately was the only thing that could bring Walt back into whatever we're going to see next week, was not his family, not any sense of do good, not anything like that, was the fact that he has to validate his existence.
Yeah, getting back to like when Jesse and Chaz mentioned talking about Jesse hitting him where he lives, and you know, as much as he loves money, they hit him where he lives, and of course with his pride and ego. That's what made that scene brilliant as well. So,
but here, just a real quick point, because I remember when I was going back and looking at the episode, like Walt all but admits, like, yeah, I came up with the name, you know, or like I came with the name of that company. Like he spends it in like a decent way, but like even in, and I remember his interactions and talking about it, even in those, he even doesn't say he had a major part in this country.
That's
in
such a
company.
Great point, Rob.
You know,
and it goes back to just...
It is like, they didn't hit him where he lived. He hit himself where he lived in his own mind. For the most part, speaking the truth.
That's the real
himself,
point.
But Bob really didn't build anything in this. When he left, he was bought out for $35,000, I think he said. Like
$35,000.
Yeah, it was a billion dollar company.
Yeah, it's 5,000. Yeah,
it might be
5,000.
Even lower, 5,000. So he really didn't build anything. So the only thing that hit him where he lived was his own sense of self and him hitting himself where he lived. And that's how delusional he is at this point.
They clearly did the heavy lifting. It was one of those situations where he was always regretful for taking that buyout. But they did the heavy lifting as far as the company, as far as the building that empire. So, with predictions, we still haven't played the Ryzen, the M60. Jesse and Skylar still live. Walt, of course, is Walt, and Todd and the Nazis, the Nazis. Just give me a basic prediction, not what you want to happen. Just a basic, straight up prediction on what you think is going to happen.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think Walt died.
Can I go first?
I want to give you
credit on this. Like at the beginning of the season, obviously my prediction: Walter's going to die. Ha ha. that's not a big prediction. Yes, breaking news. Yes, Walker's going to die. Walker was going to die since the very inception of this show. I think that much is obvious. Me and Chad had a conversation, and I think at the beginning of this season, I was like, you know, it's going to be like some type of quiet death. I remember Chad, you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, like you were like, no, it's going to be something serious.
Yep.
I agree with that now. I've gone through like a lot of scenarios in my head. First of all, let me preface this. I have no earthly idea. I honestly don't. I have no earthly idea. I'm just going to sit back and watch. It's a shootout of some kind. It's going to be big. I don't know if Walt just goes and just starts killing people. just like he goes to the their offices and just starts murdering everybody, or if he goes to where the Nazi finds him, it just starts just shooting randomly, like at like. But it's going to be big. It's going to involve that gun. And I was watching season five, the first part of season five again, and there's this scene where him and his son are watching Scarface.
Yeah.
And at the very tail end of that scene, there's this little piece of dialogue, and it cuts right off because he's like, Skyler, he goes, man, everybody dies in this movie. And then it like goes into there. And so when I think about like that, what I saw on his face, go back to the opening scene where he's opening that trunk and it's the big gun, and I think it's probably around the same type of model Scarface. It's
so
going to be
actually,
bloody.
The record, that actually
it's going
is
to
a
be,
Rambo gun. It's a Rambo gun.
Sure, fine,
Rambo.
Whatever. Point being,
the big gun.
It's the big gun. It's going to shoot a lot of things. It's going to shoot a lot of people. So that Walter dies. It's probably going to be fairly spectacular, and a lot of people are going to get killed. That's my prediction.
Yep, my prediction. Like I said, I always thought it was going to be a bloodbath. I think it's going to be very interesting, but also consistent to what they've been doing. And as we talked about a lot of this, you know, this time tonight was just about people dying, people paying for their, you know, sins and consequences and all that. So what I think, and what I hated about the show is that they made Walt freaking, he's Rocky and Rambo in one. You know, this is where he is, and with a hint of Scarface, of course. So I think he comes out blazing. I think, because the scene with the, you know, earlier on in the teaser, one of the earlier teasers with the scene with Ty and Uncle Jack, Ty's going on and on about, you know, the train robbery and how Walt was amazing. And then they cut to Uncle Jack and the other guy in the bathroom, and he's wiping his feet off with the blood, just very matter-of-factly. And clearly Todd has no idea what they have done, the way I interpreted the scene at least. So I was trying to figure out whose blood is that? Whose blood is that, you know, they're wiping their feet from? So I was like, damn, did they kill Lydia? Could they have killed Lydia, and that's why Todd is so happy and unexpected, you know?
Wait, but that was from that, but you're talking, when they were wiping the blood off, that was coming off the gunfight with the other crew that they took over the
was
drug
it?
Lab for. Yes.
I was going
that
back
was,
and forth with that.
Yes,
was that
was
from that scene?
That was Declan's crew, yes. That was where the blood was from. They killed
that
crew
okay,
to go.
Clear that up. Okay, then. Yeah. Well, clearly what I just think is going to happen, Walt's going to come back, blow up everybody, and take himself out. I feel like he's going to take himself out with the rice, and I think that's who the rice is for, because he ends up going out on his own with in complete control. Nothing else to live for. I hate it if that happens, because I don't want him to go out on his own terms. I want someone to take him out. But I feel like they're setting it up for a bloodbath, and it is going to be a bloodbath, but I don't think it's going to be his bloodbath. I don't think he goes out in this ridiculous shootout that we're going to see. I feel like he survives that. And either it's the Rison, or a quick one where Jesse shoots him in the back of the head and we get Jesse one of those staring, shaking jaw moment. And that's it. But I do think a reason I said Jesse can't take him out is because I feel like everybody dies. Like everybody. Like Skyler and the son, you know, Junior, they're not going to die. They're not going to be really in the Marines. They're not going to die. But the Nazis, Jesse, Walt, Todd, Lydia, dead. All of them. That's my prediction.
I think he, like I said, I think he takes out Jack, Todd, the Nazis. I think he takes them out with their gun. I think he uses the Rising on Lydia.
Okay.
I think he uses the Rising on Lydia. And I think
really quickly, sorry. Oh, I was going to confirm your point a little bit. Just because, again, like I was watching season five again, and there's that scene at the table where he's coming for the list of names. And he has his Heisenberg hat down. And Lydia's like all paranoid, like, yeah, you know, what happens if you da-da-da-da, and they eventually strike the deal. Lydia gets up and leaves. Walt takes his hat off, and he has the ricin right there, and he puts it back in his pocket. So, anyway.
Oh, yeah, there's Lydia. Yep. Yep. Good call.
Ricin,
I mean, first of all, I told you
so
earlier.
Go ahead. Huh? The ricin is so interesting.
That's a real good point, too, your Lydia angle, too. She's always ordering these. Really,
every time she's in the scene, she got some tea. So yeah, that's where I try to make that connection. The question for me is, the Walt. I'm assuming that he's not going to be thinking about this when it happens. But if Jesse's still on the plantation, the meth plantation, I say that in whatever taste you want to take it, he's a mad slave. I'll be interested to see the Jesse Walt interaction when he comes in there, guns blazing. I'm very interested to see that. Does he shoot Jesse? Does he let him go?
Very let him go.
There's no letting go.
Oh,
if it does happen like that, like here's how I can imagine happening. Walt comes in, guns blazing, kills mostly everybody, doesn't know Jesse's alive. Jesse comes out, picks up a gun, and shoots him in the back of his head. Ah,
yeah. There you go.
I don't care about anybody else. This is what happened, Rob. You forgot the
dialogue. He says, Mr. White. He says, turn around, you bitch.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Oh, man.
And they kill himself after that.
Did he shoot himself?
He ain't got to kill himself. What are you going to do?
Oh, man. So I will say this. I don't like, here's what that scene, going back to that scene with the girl, showed me is that it's not going to be satisfying. However we're picturing it, it's not going to be satisfying. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
I'm going to be infuriated.
I am picturing it in a very satisfying way to me, and I think there's going to be a hard scene somewhere in there. Something we don't want to happen is going to happen to somebody we're not necessarily that anxious to see get killed. And then,
you know what? It can be satisfying. I'm telling you, if they kill everyone, like opening scene, teaser, Junior dies, bam, gone, bam, boom, just destroy everything you made. Rip this
Rob
puts
the ricin in Junior's pancakes.
And make him, he smashes him in his mouth. Eat this. And make him eat it. That's what he should do. Then, if there was a thing, with Skylar with the taxi, Junior shouldn't have no car. He should ride around in a little scooter thing and walk to shoot him in the wheel. And it goes spiraling in the street.
And then he shoots a bunch of kittens and drowns some puppies.
And then Walt walks away on some blazing Arizona. He got his truck and his baby, and he leaves.
In most cases, Walt getting away would not be. But if they harken
really
back to raising Arizona, I might give a nod to that. I was like, well played. I actually appreciate that reference.
I think my perfect ending for his film would be like Walt Marlowe 5, like 8.0. Yes, he kills everybody, but he has no money, no family, nothing, and he's dying of cancer. That would be my ideal ending. He has nothing. Nothing.
But he has nothing right now.
He doesn't have nothing right now. He doesn't. You're right. He ends the whole series with nothing.
But he hasn't. Okay.
But yeah, that's not enough.
Just not even remotely enough.
You know what?
I would say,
ladies and gentlemen,
I would say to Surreal offline that it would be like to actually justify what has happened and some getting back to Walt. We need like a Game of Thrones, like torture, like a 6th season of just Walt being tortured. This entire season, just him being tortured. Like, that would probably equal what has happened. Other than that, it's nothing is going to equate equalness in the pain and misery he's given.
I just have to say this before we get off the phone. For the people who do not know your whole Surreal, for him to make that statement he said about Walt ending with nothing, it makes sense because this is the same man where we went on a college trip together and we all made up names, and the nickname he came up with was Junior. That's the best he can give you. His nickname. Now, mind you, he is a junior already in real life. He really is a junior. Out of all the nicknames in the world, this is what he comes up with. So I'm not at all surprised by your ending of Walt just losing it all, which he already has nothing. That makes so much sense that you said.
Oh, man.
Quick question for you head out. Do we see Saul? Do we see Saul in Nebraska? Or was this episode the last that we saw Saul before the spinoff?
I was going to say, he's going to be in the spinoff. He's going to have his own show.
Yeah,
he's going to
have his own show. Right. You think we see Saul in this episode?
Yeah.
No, Saul's
gone. Last question you ended off on, Saul. Yeah. Who's Saul in this episode? He's gone.
This will be the last one then.
Thank you.
Do you think that
Saul is the last episode?
Do you think that Elliot and Gretchen will play a role in this last episode? Could he go after them? Chloe, what do you think, Chloe?
I mean, she's like, come on, Dad, 2 hours, really? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, like, thinking that very literal. And so, yes, I do see them playing a role in this.
Is this episode extended? Is it just an hour?
Yeah, it's 75.
No, it's 75.
Just like 5 minutes, yeah. Just like this previous episode.
Oh, okay.
Episode.
I honestly don't see them. I think they serve their purpose. I just think that to put them in it is going to need more than one scene to make it the smooth transition. I could be wrong.
Yeah,
I just don't.
True.
I don't see it. Them having time to devote any energy into that. They didn't need it. What he's gonna do? Go kill him? Like, I mean, unless he is crazy, like Rob said, just kill him. I don't think.
Oh,
if they happen to be somewhere where he's killing somebody else and he sees them, sure. You know, whatever.
They just happened to drive up.
Right.
Oh, man.
Basically, y'all agree that Walt is going to inflict some pain with the M60. That's Walt's going to do some damage.
And everybody but you knows he's going to die.
No, I believe he's
you
right.
Just have Walt sitting in a corner.
I want Walt going out like Michael Corleone in Godfather 3. By himself, miserable.
Godfather 3,
out of all the Godfathers, you reference Godfather 3. He's the only one who starts to finish like in Godfather 3. Nobody else says that.
Oh, man, only you.
All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up. We'll be back next week with a recap of the finale and certainly where does this show rank in the all-time greats. We'll talk about that. Thank you, gentlemen, as always.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. It was a pleasure.
All right. See you soon.
All right. Take care.
That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Surreal Court Review. Thank you for joining us for the last 2 hours and change.